sit back and enjoy the stroke play of Meg Lanning.
This is excellent batting by Ash Gardner.
Jonathan strikes again. She's on a hat-trick. She comes at Molyneux. Catch is taken by Perry.
The Australian women's cricket team win their fifth T20 World Cup title in front of a magical crowd at the MCG.
Welcome back to The Scoop. We are the cricket podcast dedicated to the women's game. Now, things are getting pretty real in the WBBL Village. We've got a bumper episode before we dive into another hectic few days of games.
We chatted with the milestone woman, Molly Strano, earlier in the week. She celebrated her 100th WBBL wicket on the weekend. And Kristen Beams was in great form as usual, looking at the form of all the teams and players.
First things first, though, LJ, what was your favourite moment from the weekend?
I have to say it was the super over in the Melbourne Derby. These matches always seem to throw up interesting results. Lower ranked teams beat the one who's going better. And we had a super over, which was brilliant. And for the Renegades, a win that I think was much needed at this point of the tournament. How about you, Em?
For me, I think it would have to be the way that cricket came together to celebrate NAIDOC Week. It was great to see the players being really proactive and taking a stand against racism, as well as celebrating Indigenous culture, and also to see two of the Indigenous players, young guns Ella Haywood and Hannah Darlington, performing so well in front of the big crowds at Sydney Showgrounds. We had just the 8 matches over the weekend, plenty happening in WBBL land. Biggest talking point, probably the Sixers losing their 4th match in a row. So they went down to the Hobart Hurricanes and the Adelaide Strikers over the weekend. They're out of the top 4 and things aren't looking too good in the Magenta camp, are they, LJ?
No, they've got a few problems going on there. Ash Gardner, unfortunately, was subbed out of that match against the Strikers with a concussion. I think it was precautionary. It looked like a fairly innocuous dive on the boundary, but she does have a terrible record with concussions in the past, so there's no wonder that they'll take no risks with her. Healy is a bit out of form, a couple of low scores, and Hayley Silverholmes has remained on the sidelines with her foot injury. But in one good thing, today they named their squad, and Lauren Cheadle is back. She hasn't played a match in Magenta since WBBL 04.
And more on the injury front. It's not good news for two of our favourite Kiwis. So firstly, Susie Bates, Adelaide Strikers captain, really sad to hear that she'll be flying home to New Zealand for shoulder surgery. And another one, Sophie Devine. We won't see her in orange this weekend, will we?
No, Sophie seemed to come up with a lower back injury while she was bowling on Sunday, and she's been off for scans. I think they're still waiting to find out exactly how bad it is, but we do know she'll miss at least 2 of their last 4 matches.
On to some better news, though. We're set for an absolute cracker of a finish to WBBL 06. It's going to be a super tight finish with 16 matches remaining. Just one win separates the 3rd to 7th places on the ladder.
And there's just 2 weeks of bubble life remaining for the teams that do advance to the finals. It's going to really test the team's mental fortitude and could play a big role in which teams actually advance to the finals.
Big time. Alrighty, we're lucky enough to be joined here today by Renegades legend Molly Strano, who's been kind enough to join us in the WBBL Village. Now, Molly, we've got a few random questions to kick things off. So the first thing we want to know is how many coffees you've been going through per day in the Village.
Oh, hey, Em, firstly. Thanks for having me. Coffees, I've been trying to stick to 2 a day, but due to some unforeseen circumstances, I've had 3 or 4, PB4, but I'm trying to stick to 2.
All right, that sounds pretty on par with us. Yeah, yep. So I reckon you're probably on par with everyone.
That makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah, cool. Next question, what was your first job?
First job, I worked at Ferguson Blair Bakehouse in out west of Melbourne. And I used to do the open shift, so put the pies in, get them nice and warm, ready for the tradies for their lunch, which used to be around 9 o'clock. But yeah, I was the pie girl, the pie warmer at Ferguson Blair Bakehouse for 4 years, actually. So it was a great gig.
4 years, solid stint.
Yep.
And how did you celebrate your 21st birthday?
21st birthday, Prince Alfred Hotel, Richmond. It wasn't a massive one, just had a few mates out the back. The worst thing about my birthday is it always clashes with round one of the club cricket season. So, but that didn't stop me from going large, to be honest. So I had a very good night, but yeah, I celebrated in Richmond.
Excellent. And what is the best holiday you've ever been on?
Best holiday. I've been on a few ripping holidays, especially end of season trips when you're with the girls and everyone's, you know, ready to have fun and let their hair out. But probably my favourite trip was I went to Bali, and it wasn't, well, Bali is beautiful, but the company was also A grade. It was myself, Kristen Beams, Heather Graham, Emily Smith. And we had a lot of fun, and we had our own private villa and whatnot. So it was a recipe for success, really, and we had a great time.
And what were you like as a school student?
My report card would say that I was disruptive. I was somewhat studious, but the wheels came off in year 12 once I turned 18 and whatnot. I was a little bit preoccupied with life outside of school, but yeah, I was a bit of a rat bag at school, to be honest. So yeah, as I said, probably in one word, disruptive.
Sometimes I used to say bubbly. Bubbly's on the report card.
I would take bubbly. That's like got a nicer undertone. Great. Yeah. Disruptive. Disruptive. Like.
And final random question. Why is it that you don't ever come on the mic on Channel 7? Because I'm sure there are plenty of fans that would want to hear your voice.
Oh, no, no, no. I've had a few discussions about on-field mic. And it just petrifies me a little bit because sometimes I can't control what actually comes out of my mouth. Once I cross the white line, I get a bit of white line fever. And I don't want to miss games from doing anything naughty. So I just thought it's probably best for the viewers at home, Channel 7, and for everyone in the wider public that I do not get on the mic while I'm playing.
Fair enough. We can dream one day. And onto the Melbourne Renegades. We all love the Melbourne Renegades. Are you able to just tell us a little bit about what you love about playing for the Renegades? And can you think back to your first couple of weeks with the Gades back in WBBL 01?
Yeah, I absolutely love the Gades. I really feel at home when I put on the red uniform, and it's somewhere where I'm completely comfortable and I know I can truly be myself, which is a really nice feeling as a cricketer in a team environment. Yeah, I still remember 01. It was a tough season. We won 4 games out of 14. So it was a really tough start to the campaign and the tournament in whole. And then year 2, we got a little bit better. We had 6 wins. And then the next 2 seasons, we were able to play and contest for some semi-finals. So it's been a really cool evolution. We were a really young team early on. And then as we matured and played a little bit of cricket together and started to learn each other's game and form a really solid game plan, we're able to get a little bit more success. So the first few years were pretty tough, from winning the Wooden Spoon in year 1 and playing in a couple of semi-finals over the last 2 years. It's been an awesome rollercoaster journey, but super fun nonetheless. We've got some huge personalities in our team, which makes playing and training really fun, and I just love it here. As I said earlier on, I feel really comfortable and it feels like home, really, putting on the red. So, yeah, I love it.
Yeah, you guys seem so tight-knit. You've had a lot of you have been there from the start. What is that culture like?
It's just fun. Like, I know that sounds pretty cliche, but as I said, we've got some pretty big personalities, which brings so much life and energy to the group. And we've got some incredible support staff too, who also add so much value. So yeah, we're all pretty chilled sort of chicks, and we like to kick back and enjoy our cricket, but we also enjoy our time off the pitch together too, which has been really awesome, and it's sort of magnified in this hub environment. We've been able to, you know, hang out a lot and watch some things and and just enjoy each other's company, which has been really nice.
Speaking of the support staff, we heard a little rumour that the first time you met your current coach, you were doing the worm in the dressing room.
I was so nervous when I was going to go. Look, Lockie's he's great. He's so incredible. He's had a huge impact on my cricketing career, and he's just a real trusted mentor of mine. But, he was our coach in year one, and year one and two had a couple of years off, and now he's back again. But I remember our first game we were playing against the Hobart Hurricanes. This is our first game ever in Big Bash history, and I could sense a bit of tension in the room, and everyone was really nervous. So I didn't know what I was doing. I just had this like sort of moment where the music was on in the change rooms pre-game, and I thought I'd just bust out a worm to get a few like cheap laughs. And then like this new coach that doesn't even know me from a bar of soap is probably just like, what have I signed up for? Like, these girls have crazy. But that was our first touch point. But since then, as I said, I consider myself really lucky to have Locke in my life as a coach, and he's, as I said, a really trusted mentor, and I really value his opinion when it comes to sort of nitpicking my game and helping me grow and develop as a cricketer. Love Lock, and I'm glad that he's back around again.
What are some of the things that Lockie's sort of helped you with your game, and what roles he played in your cricket?
He's been huge with my bowling. When I first, in year one of Big Bash, I was a pretty young and raw 22-year-old who hadn't played much T20 cricket, and I sort of found myself opening the bowling and bowling in all three phases of the game, and it was quite overwhelming for, as I said, a young sort of raw spinner to play those sort of roles for the team at a young age. And he sort of helped me sort of work out my craft and what it looks like. I'm not your average off spinner. I don't really spin it. But Locke was great in telling me to embrace some other strengths of my game. I know I don't turn it sideways, but I've got some other attributes that can sort of help me be successful through all facets of the game. And he was one that, you know, really reiterated that for me and made me believe that I could sort of perform at this level when at times I wasn't sure if I could cut the mustard at this level. So he's been really important in my development. And yeah, as I said, I'm really thankful for him as well.
Yeah, awesome. Is there anyone else that you can think of that's had a really massive impact on your cricketer? Like, is there anyone you can single out and say, that person's just been amazing for me?
Kristen Beams has been a huge one in my development. I met her when I was even younger and a little bit more raw at my club side, Essendon Maribyrnong Park, when I was 15. And ever since I started playing in the ones, I just idolised Beamsy. She was a Victorian player in our team, and I just put her on such this pedestal and just sort of watched everything she did and just mimicked everything she did, hoping that I could one day have the success that she did at not only domestic level but Australian level. So, and she sort of took me under her wing, ever since day dot, and she's been also huge in my development as a spin bowler, and I've learnt so much from her in the craft of bowling spin. I know she bowls leg breaks and I bowl off breaks, but I can't speak highly enough of Beams in how, you know, generous she's been with her time and her knowledge. She's another one that's had a huge impact on my career.
And is she someone you would still hit up for advice even when she was at the Stars and at your rivals?
Yeah, I still do, and I did while we're playing for opposition teams. I remember we used to have like these really cute brunch dates when we both worked at the Australian Cricketers Association, and we used to take our little notepads out and draw little circles and set fields for different players and stuff. And that was, yeah, as I said, she was captaining the Stars at that stage, and she still had the time and the energy to give to me at work, and she used to help me sort of choreograph plans and field settings and impart so much knowledge to me during those phases as well. So, yeah, she's been huge, and, as I said, someone that's always been so generous with her time and knowledge.
And we've got a little bit of a trivia question for you. You're currently the all-time leading wicket taker in the WBBL with 99 wickets. Do you know which batter you've gotten out the most times?
Oh, no? No, I have no idea. No.
Beth Mooney, 5 times.
Moons, what are you doing, dolls? Going out to me, seriously, bowling little straight breaks. What is she doing? I love Moon. She's one of my very best mates. That's been a real cool thing about being around the Aussie group of recent times, getting to know some girls from different franchises and different teams. So Moons is someone that I lean on quite heavily up in the Aussie environment, and she's another one that's sort of taken me under her wing and made me feel at home at that level. So shout out to Moons, but I'm really disappointed, Moons, that you've gone out to me that many times. That's a poor stat on your behalf.
Oh, she gets a shout out. And Molly, thinking back to WBBL01, you said you were a pretty fresh bowler. Sitting here now on the cusp of a pretty incredible milestone, how do you think you've evolved as a bowler in that time?
It's been an absolute roller coaster. There's been some times where the ball feels like it's coming out horribly, and there's been some other times where I feel like you're really good and you feel like you're going all right with your skill set. But I think you're just constantly learning and evolving, and it's been a tough sort of, as I said, 5-year block as a spin bowler, because the game's evolved so rapidly over that 5 years. Everyone from your number one batter down to your number 8 and 9 can hit sixes now and clear the picket. So it's become tougher and tougher, and I've found that out firsthand this year. I haven't performed to the level that I would have hoped I could have for the Renegades, and I feel like I sort of let the team down a little bit in that regard. But it's just each year it just keeps getting tougher and tougher, and you have to continue to bounce back and be more resilient. But it's such an awesome awesome competition to be involved in, and I love it, and it's so much fun every year to roll out and put the Renegades red on and compete against some of the best players in the world. And it's just a product that just keeps getting stronger and stronger, and a product that continually becomes harder and harder as a bowler to sort of perform in and hold up your end. So yeah, as I said, I just continue to learn and evolve, hopefully evolve each instalment. And yeah, as I said, it's just an awesome tournament to be involved in, and I'm loving it.
So talk us through some of the hard work that goes into trying to keep up with these big hitting batters. Like, what sort of work do you put in at training to keep up with them?
I think it's the planning side of things becomes more important. We all know that there's some huge hitters in this competition, and it's just trying to work out ways to nullify them and what you can do to, you know, reduce their impact, so to say. So I think the planning side of things has come along a long way since year one, where you sort of just used to roll out your stock. Well, not as well, so to say, but just sort of roll out your stock ball and just try to stack up in certain areas. Now you have to have plan A, B and C, which becomes a lot more harder. And yeah, I think, as I said, sort of like the analysing side of things and the game planning stuff has come a long way, and that's probably a really important thing now in the fifth year of WBBL.
Do you think you've seen like with the level of support staff rising, do you think that's become easier for the bowlers to sort of keep up with the batters like that?
Yeah, and we've got some hugely knowledgeable staff in all teams as well that can help us as players to, you know, formulate plans and ways to nullify the batters. And we're so lucky that on the database that we all have access to as players, we can see footage from all games over the last sort of 5 to 10 years and try to pick out trends in modes of dismissal, and just to be able to watch batters that we're going to come up against. We're so lucky to have all of that at the tip of our finger on our computers. So yeah, it's become a big project now, coming up against teams and working out ways to best perform and what's the best to do for yourself and for the team. So yeah, it's becoming a big assignment now.
And when you look back over the past 5.5 seasons, is there a favourite wicket that stands out in your memory that you've taken?
Oh, not really. As I said, I'm not a very glitz and glam sort of spin bowler. Like, I wish I had something like, you know, bowling to a right-hander and it's come through the gate and taken out leg stump. But as I said, I'm a bit workman class like, so none of my wickets are glamorous, and most of them are caught at cow corner. So that's another stat that you should do, LJ, to work out how many catches I've had on the cow corner fence. But not one sort of stands out. Probably just for me, more wins and close wins, and that sort of euphoria in the change rooms. That's the sort of things that I remember. It's not any wicket per se, but more those really euphoric moments where you've won and had a tight win and just that feeling in the change room. That's the memories that I take out of sort of the first couple of instalments of the Big Bash.
And what would you say has been your favourite win or the most euphoric win?
We've been involved in a few super overs, so they've been interesting. for all the wrong reasons, but one of the toughest losses that we've had as a team, where we were all just demoralised, was the super over loss against the Sixers at Drummoyne 2 years ago. That was just a magical day for women's cricket, having the two tight semi-final games, which were just incredible. But to be on the... We gave it our all. We didn't leave anything in the tank, and we just came up short against a really, really good Sixers side. But for all the wrong reasons, I remember that one and how much that hurt. But we've had some pretty incredible wins where we've been able to belt out the team song in the change rooms afterwards. We always enjoy beating the Melbourne Stars. So that's over the last, I think last year we beat them at the Junction and we gave the song a good rendition that time. I just, for some reason, I'm really like protective of the Renegades brand and playing for this team. I feel like the mother hen. I've been around since day dot, but I just get really excited, and I'm really pumped when we're able to come into the change rooms and sing the song and just see the smile on everyone's faces and how everyone's super pumped. But and even our win against the Sydney Thunder the other day, that was awesome. Like, we had a really tough start to our campaign, and we've lost some of our you know, our favourite Renegades girls who aren't with us, who would love, we would love to be out there, and they're not, and sort of against the odds, we're able to pull off a win against a really, really strong Thunder side, and we thoroughly enjoyed that, and it was just a really nice moment for all the girls to be able to come together and sing the song. So of recent memory, that was a really good win for us.
All things considered, how are the Renegades holding up in this WBBL village?
Yeah, we're holding up really well. As I said, we haven't been too lucky on the injury front. We're missing Leah and Wolfie and Mado at the moment, which they're not only are they massive contributors on the field, they're incredibly important to us off the field as well. So having those three girls down is a massive loss for us, and we're all hurting for them, especially Wolfie and especially Mado after hamstring surgery, where you know, we've got everything crossed for them that they can all have, those two can both have speedy recoveries and be back out in red sooner rather than later. But we're all pretty excited that, you know, Lee is close to coming back, and it's really heartwarming to see her bowling at training and scaring a few batters. So hopefully we see Leah back sooner rather than later, and hopefully very, very soon, as in tomorrow. yeah, as I said, it's been a bit of a roller coaster one for us, and a bit heartbreaking at times hearing some of those serious injuries. But with that aside, we're having a hell of a lot of fun and really enjoying this hub environment. And yeah, as I said, we haven't been too successful thus far on the pitch, but hopefully towards the back end of the campaign, we can pinch a couple of wins and finish strongly.
Definitely. Well, we're also crossing our fingers for you. And change of pace, we can't not speak about that Aussie World Cup campaign. So you weren't initially in the squad, but Taylor Vlemmick unfortunately got struck down by an injury. What was it like those couple of days where you found out that you were going to be a shot call up to the Aussie squad for the T20 World Cup?
Absolute mayhem. So I think we played on, the first game was on a Friday night. Trained on the Thursday with the girls. That was my first day with the group. And flew up the Wednesday night, so I had one day of prep. And even though I was on standby, you just sort of, I've been on standby a few times for an Aussie tour, and nothing normally happens. So like, I definitely had no idea that I was remotely close to playing or thereabouts. And then it's almost mixed emotions when you get that phone call, because I obviously know Tay really well. I play with her at Victoria, and she's just the most lovable teammate, and she's just so universally loved. So to hear her, and that she sustained a pretty serious injury, and I was her injury replacement, it was hugely mixed in how I was feeling. But then it was just a mad rush trying to find all my Aussie kit and get everything sorted for a 4-week tour when all my stuff was scattered all over Melbourne. I had stuff at Mum's house and not much at my apartment where I actually live, because it's not big enough to store all my cricket kit. So yeah, it was absolute mayhem, but it was another sort of roller coaster journey, and so much fun to be a part of. And I feel incredibly blessed to be able to experience that. And it's a sort of tournament that I'll remember for the rest of my life. I've never been a part of a World Cup squad before, and to be able to be involved in one on home soil was something else. And as I said, I'll never forget that.
And you were meant to be playing for EMP that weekend, weren't you?
Yeah, I was listening to play on Sunday. And I gave him the heads up that I'd be playing for, with the Australian squad on the Friday night. I'm not sure if I could duck off from Sydney to Essendon on the Sunday before we went to Perth or something, where our next port of call was. But they were so excited for me. Yeah. And my club side's incredible. They've been a huge supporter of mine, and all the club followed each game so closely. And a few of the old girls came out and watched a few of the games and travelled around to watch the Aussie girls. So yeah, it was a bit of a weird sort of time of my life, but an awesome one nonetheless.
Yeah, and bowling the first ball of the World Cup to Shefali Verma, what's running through your head in that moment?
Honestly, it's like the countdown time is going, and I'm just like, it's like 5, 4, 3. That's what the crowd's saying, and I'm like, shit, 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 shit. I was very nervous. And I just know how devastating she can be, because we played against her in the Oz A stuff just a little while before the World Cup. So, yeah, I was just praying that the ball landed remotely close up towards the batter's end, because I was just running on pure adrenaline. But it was such a buzz at Showgrounds. It was pretty full. It felt like an away game, because there's a lot of Indian supporters there, and there was a lot of cheering and yahooing going on. But it was awesome, an awesome experience, and one that I'll never forget. I never thought that I'd pull on an Australian jersey. Mm-hmm. Again, I hadn't played for 2.5 years prior to that point, and I just thought that sort of ship had sailed and that the Aussie stuff was done and dusted. And as I said, I'd never been involved in a World Cup, and all of a sudden I was opening the bowling for Australia in a World Cup. I was just, it was a bit of a pinch yourself sort of moment. So, yeah, it was awesome.
And the whole thing was just a whirlwind, wasn't it? I think you were on a plane every third day through the whole tournament. What do you think now, looking back on it?
Oh, it was such, when you look at like when you reflect, and we had a bit of downtime, obviously, with COVID and stuff after the World Cup to sort of sit back and reflect. It was just a crazy tournament, like crazy good when I say crazy. But I remember we lost that first game against India, and then we went over to Perth to play Sri Lanka, and we had our backs against the wall, and it almost looked like at one stage that we're going to go out in straight sets there. Which was highly nerve-wracking. There was a lot of pressure on the girls to perform well and do well on home soil, which, you know, I'm guessing everyone at CA had their fingers crossed that Australia was going to feature at the MCG on the 8th of Feb. But we had a really slow start, and then all of a sudden the girls started to get their mojo and started to play some really good cricket, which all culminated at the MCG, where they were just completely dominant, and it was so good to watch. From the sidelines, just watch the girls, you know, go out there and strut their stuff and just showcase their skills, which was just phenomenal. And of course, the Victorians and all the Melbourne folk came to the party and filled up the MCG, and that was just a magical day. So yeah, as I said, the tournament as a whole was a bit of a roller coaster with the slow start, and then slowly building up to that final where everything sort of just clicked, and it was just almost like the perfect storm. So yeah, it was really cool.
We often think back to that Thursday at the SCG where it was raining the whole day, and like to think that we got from that point to the MCG is just like pretty remarkable. And then you throw in COVID as well. Like, it's just, sometimes you just shake your head.
Well, in my summation of the tournament, I actually forgot to talk about the mystery at the SCG. Like, how did we actually play a game of cricket that day? It was raining cats and dogs all day. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is it. We're not going to get on tonight. And then we saw the game before us get washed out, and we're like, oh, this is doomed. And then the cricketing gods and Mother Nature just looked after us for that little moment in time, and we're able to get out there, and that was a really, really tight game, and everyone was biting their nails, and it was super close. But yeah, that's another layer to the narrative. That was the World Cup. And yeah, to get through to the final after that hard fought semi just put all the girls in really good stead, I think. A really tough semi leading into a final, and yeah, it was just a magical time, and I'm so honoured, and I feel like I'm really privileged to be a part of that squad and to be able to experience that.
Yeah, for sure. And onto the stage. So you've got Katy Perry next to you, full MCG you're looking over at. What was it like up there?
Oh my God, I got a bit of stage fright.
It didn't show.
Normally when I'm performing, I'm normally performing to about 15 people at EMP. Yeah. When we have our social functions and the music comes on, I normally give it my all, and I'm like, there's only 15 people here. It's almost like dance like no one's watching, because there's only 15 people watching. But then all of a sudden, when I get this opportunity that I've probably been waiting for my whole life, I see all these cameras and all these people, and I'm just like, oh my God, what do I do? Like, can I dance? I don't want to step on Katy Perry's toes. Like, has she got a routine choreographed for this song? Do I just sit back and clap, or can I go out there and do my thing? And then the adrenaline just sort of took over, and I sort of started to cut some shapes. But but it was amazing. Like, it was, you'd actually, there's no words to describe that feeling, yeah. That sort of adrenaline of seeing so many faces just watching you and cheering and dancing, yeah. And having fun, and It was an absolute ball. Sophie Molyneux, hats off. She was unbelievable. And Erin Burns too. Yeah. I reckon they were one and two. But yeah, I think just even looking back at those photos and just seeing how happy everyone was, and just to be able to capture that moment, those photos will age really well. And I can't wait for the reunions in 20 years' time when we're all hanging out and we're flicking through those photos and just being like, oh, look how young and fresh we were then back in the day. But yeah, that was an awesome experience also.
What did you and Soph and Erin say to each other as soon as you got off the stage? Were you just like, what did we just do?
I don't think there are any words. We're just like, our jaws are on the ground, and we're just like, did that just happen? Or are we just like living a dream? But we definitely took that momentum back into the change rooms and continued on the party. And the MCG change rooms were absolutely humming. We had all our friends and family down there, and it was just a really nice moment to be able to experience and share that World Cup win with all our loved ones and our close ones who have all supported us and helped us get to that stage. So, yeah, it was a really special night and, yeah, one that I'll never forget.
Neither will we. Molly, a story for the ages, and thank you so much for joining us on The Scoop, and we wish you and the Renegades all the very best for the rest of the season.
Thanks, Em. Thanks, LJ.
We are lucky enough to be speaking once again with ABC commentator Kristen Beams. Beamsy, it was an absolute cracker of a weekend. So many highlights and talking points to reflect on. But we're going to ask you to narrow it down to your favourite moment.
Oh, that's a tough question to hit me straight up with. Yep. This is a tough one for me to say, but I actually think my highlight was the derby yesterday between the two Melbourne teams. Obviously, I would have loved to have seen the Stars get up in that game, but I think it was a really significant game for the Renegades in particular. It had all of the romance. Molly Strana gets her 100th wicket. We saw Lizelle Lee really lighting it up and seeing her back in that opening spot, which I love to see. And perhaps it was the loss the Stars needed to have in terms of, I think you do need to lose leading into finals just so you can make sure that you're staying on your toes. So I think that game in itself, I think we were all so disappointed when the derbies got washed out at the start of this tournament. So to see a cracking game of cricket was exactly what we needed leading into the finals.
And on Molly, you wrote a lovely column last week about her evolution as a bowler, and she's been singing your praises as a mentor. What did it mean for you to see her get that 100th wicket?
Yeah, it was really special, and I'm sure it was special for most of us that know Molly more so than it was for Molly, because I think she's so self-deprecating and so modest. But I think to see someone who's worked that hard actually get the rewards they deserve. Unfortunately, in T20 cricket, you don't always get the rewards you deserve. You can bowl really well and get whacked or find yourself out of the team for different reasons. But to see a player like Molly, who just continues to be so important to a franchise the way that she has, was just really, really special. And she's got the potential to set a marker out in terms of wickets that no one will get close to. And that would be an amazing achievement for her and one that she deserves. So, I was a very proud big sister, that's for sure.
I think everybody loved seeing that finger go up and Molly's awesome celebration. Beamsy, you've played a few Melbourne derbies yourself. What is it about them that they're always so good?
I actually have no idea. I was once asked about the rivalry between the Renegades and the Stars and said, oh, you know, do you really get yourself up for a Melbourne derby? And I just laughed and I was like, no, I have the same level of dislike for every team other than your own. And so I never really understood it. But for whatever reason, over time, I think those derbies have been cracking games. And I think, I'm not really sure on the stats head-to-head, but the Renegades have actually had it over the Stars. I think they get themselves up for that game. And that's why I think it was so significant for the Renegades. I think they're at a really important crossroads in this season, is it could sort of peter out and float along. But they give themselves a chance now to win some more games and start to get some momentum. So I think it was really important for them to get that win and no doubt it'd be a nice grudge match. I'm sure they had a nice beer to enjoy knocking over the Stars.
I'm sure they did. And one of the standout performances in that game yesterday was young Ella Hayward taking 4 wickets. Nat Siver was her first WBBL wicket. You called her out as someone to watch at the start of the season. What did you enjoy about watching that spell from her?
Yeah, she actually gives the ball really nice flight, and she's a great kid. She's got a really good confidence level. There's no doubt that both franchises would have wanted to sign her. She's that good. So I think the Renegades have done well to sign her, and probably fortuitously for her with the injury to Georgia Wareham, it's meant that she's been able to play a key role. And I think that's been really important. So for her to give the ball a bit of flight, give it some nice shape, is really a different change up to both Strano and Molyneux, who are a bit quicker through the air. Molyneux gets some nice spin as well. So having that slower spin option, I think, is really, really important. And that's why she's been so successful. I think the other bowlers around her are doing a really nice job, especially with Tahuhu back, that was massive as well. So I think with a good bowling group like that, Ella Hayward can take a lot of wickets for the Renegades.
Definitely very exciting. And another one we're sure you would have enjoyed was the Hurricanes on Saturday. Rachel Priest and Hayley Matthews just put on a show to take out the Sydney Sixers. Do you think it sort of speaks to the depth and the depth of the competition that the Hurricanes, who have been struggling a little bit, can come out and just trounce the Sixers like that?
Yeah, I think it goes to show that every team on their day has the capacity. And for the Hurricanes, they've had to sort of shift their game plan a little bit. They're very reliant on their top order from a batting point of view. And from a bowling point of view, they need a collective performance from each of their bowlers. And I think that's probably why we're seeing a bit of a difference between the best and their worst at the moment. But for them to put it together against the Sydney Sixers, I think the record is something like 12-1 in the head-to-heads. I mean, they just haven't got close to the Sixers over such a long period of time. Yeah. But that innings from Rachel Preece, that's the best I've ever seen her bat, both internationally and domestically. I think she went through the gears and she really took it to them. And it can't, the romance would have been to get 100, but I think she'll take a win over the Sydney Sixers any day of the week.
Absolutely. And on to the Sixers. They've now lost 4 matches in a row. What do you think's going wrong for them and what do they need to do to turn it around?
Yeah, I think the Sixers are such an interesting team. There's no doubt that they've got all the talent in the world. And I think from their point of view, it's just about making the top four. So whatever they need to do to scrap themselves there, I think if they're in the top four, they will be successful enough to win the WBBL. And they've had patches in the past. We've had the Sixers going vertical and they lost some games in that. I actually think it's just about sort of really taking the game on. I think we haven't seen Healy sort of get going yet. And there's been a little bit more pressure on that middle order to make some runs. So, look, I think they're one Elisa Healy power play away from absolutely bouncing back and knocking their next team out of the water. So I'm not sure who they've got next, but it might be a danger sign for that team because I think Healy's really going to step up and we might see a different Sydney Sixers.
They've got the Brisbane Heat next. Should be an interesting clash.
Ooh, cracker.
Yeah. So on to the Heat. Last time we spoke, last week, the Heat were coming off three straight losses. Now a week later, they've got 3 wins on the board and they've leapt into third spot. Seems like they've timed their run pretty well and they've hit a really good spot of form.
Yeah, I think everyone knew they had the capacity to play this sort of cricket. And when you've got players in your team that are so dynamic, especially from a batting point of view, I think we've not seen the best of them at the start of this tournament, but I agree. I think they've really paced it really well and they've got some players in some really nice touch. And what's probably helping them a lot at the moment has been their bowling group. I mean, Jess Jonathan's bowling exceptionally well, as is Amelia Kerr. So I think their bowlers are getting the job done and it's making it a little bit easier for their batting group to play the way that they want to play. And they're getting some stability up top from Georgia Redmayne. And I think that's allowing the more dynamic players to also just sort of take the game on a little bit more. So Laura Kimmett's innings the other day was just amazing on a wicket that just looked really difficult to bat on. And she just looked like a different pitch. And I thought that's absolutely what the Heat can do.
And speaking of the Heat, their next 2 assignments are the Sixers and then the Scorchers, which are massive matches in the context of this season. How do you see those unfolding?
Yeah, I think the Heat-Sixers game will be an amazing game to watch. I'm backing the Sixers in there. I think they'll come back and play their best cricket, but probably the matchup there is probably going to be the Scorchers and the Heat who can get over the line there. There's obviously the concern with injury to Sophie Devine, and that might be fairly telling in that game. I think the Scorchers with Devine are pretty hard to beat, especially with Chloe Paparo stepping up and playing a key role as well. So if I'm the Heat, I'm probably hoping Sophie Devine's going to miss that game and it'll set them up beautifully into the top 4.
Definitely. So heading into the final 2 weeks, there's so little separating the top 7 teams as they all hunt one of those semi-final spots. A few of the players have been speaking about the sort of mental resilience that will be needed in these final stages. Do you think it's sort of around now that we'll really start to see the difference in those teams that can handle that pressure?
I think so. And at the back end of any tournament, you start to get a bit weary and, you know, the losses hurt you a little bit harder. And I think it's, you know, T20 is an up and down game. So your ability to sort of cut through it becomes a little more important. So can you bounce back from that poor performance and actually come up and show up the next day and perform? And it's, for me, that's sort of the really key thing. You're still going to have bad days at the back end of a tournament. Nothing's going to sort of flow along and be really easy. So I think the teams that bounce back really quickly, and that's why I think the next game's vital for the Sixers. I think if we can see teams do that, I think you'll come through flying colours. If the losses start to really hurt you, I think you can snowball out of the top 4 and end up probably disappointed at the back end of the tournament and say, oh, if only And you don't want to be in that position.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting to see how the next week or so unfolds. Beamsy, thank you as always for joining us on The Scoop. Can't wait to watch and speak about it all next week.
Can't wait. Thanks, guys.
Thank you as always for joining us on this week's episode of The Scoop.
We've got a huge final 6 days of the competition coming up. Every team will be playing on Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday and Sunday. And at the end of it all, we will know this year's top four.
You will not want to miss a moment of this. Make sure you keep up to date with all the latest news on cricket.com.au and on social media via cricket.com.au channels and the WBBL channels. We'll chat to you next week.
Healy's away. Australia are away.
Sit back and enjoy the stroke play of Meg Lanny.
This is excellent batting by Ash Gardner.
Jonathan strikes again. She's on a hat-trick.
She comes at Molyneux. Catch is taken by Perry.
The Australian women's cricket team win their fifth T20 World Cup title in front of a magical crowd at the MCG.